I probably shop through the Yahoo forums just to find anything that's related there. Again, I don't have the using article directories in front of me, but to be honest, I've never gone into a venture without having an idea starting out of what kind of big players are already in the market.
Right. Well, I think your advice is very valid about going to the end result consumer and say, what do you read? And basically kind of work from that end backwards. Mm-hmm. Say, okay, well, if that's what he's reading, then I need to get in there, find out who publishes that, and contact that person.
Yeah.
So that makes good sense. Now, once you've actually, you should have this done before you start promoting. When you're creating your website, what are some of the little tricks that you and Mark used to, or I guess that you probably would use now, as far as specific fonts and colors or sizes? Is there something in there other than the copy, like the visual side of things?
You know, when one of these little insider secrets is a little pamphlet that Ted Nicholas always sells at his seminars, and you can probably still, he might have a downloadable version of it, but I have a hard copy. It only costs like $5, and it's called 87 Secrets to Getting Your Letters Open. And there's it's about direct mail, and you know, there's stuff about envelopes and a couple of things, but there's some basic ideas about readability. You know, don't bother with distracting background. Usually black text on white or maybe yellow is going to be the easiest to read.
Okay.
And that's what's really important, is you don't want to distract someone from the information. Unless, maybe if, for most products, I'll say for most products, talking about it, using words in sentences, is probably going to be the most effective way of, an efficient way for you and the consumer of conveying the value of it.
Okay.
Right. Now, if your product requires a demonstration, then go for it. If you know if you're talking about something that's audio, then yeah, you probably want to provide a sample, but you're still going to have to talk about it. All
right? Right. Yeah.
So what's most important is that you make it readable, and you probably want to present it in a format that they are familiar with, because the last thing you want is for them to have to struggle to understand the information. So I like to have things formatted just like a letter, you know, because that's something that's already in existence. And you see that all over the internet. But Mike was, who's Mike? Mark was one of the first people to really do that on a regular basis.
Uh-huh.
If you look at a newsletter that he ran back in the day, it was originally called, I think, Confessions of an Internet Marketer, and then that grew into the Mind Control Marketing List.
Right.
Those were always formatted as a letter to the reader. Gary Halbert's stuff is always formatted as a letter to the reader, and it looks like you just open the envelope. He's a big direct response guy, so that, you know, that's natural for him.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to go that far. But an email is something that people are familiar with reading. You have a short greeting that says, "Dear reader," or "Hello there," and then it launches into an indented paragraph that explains something relevant right away.
Right, yep.
And the next thing is, and Mark definitely taught me this, is about having a streamlined sign-up process.
And what's that?
It means reduce it to as few steps as possible.
Okay.
And make those steps follow logically.
Okay.
So step one, read. Step two, fill out the form here. Step three, fill in the name of your friends. Boom, there you are. viral mechanism. Okay? Don't add any extra steps. Don't give people too many options when it isn't relevant. You know?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's about it. I mean, that's still what I try to achieve with a website.
Okay.
And that's something that you'll see at savemyemail.org. It's really simple. You go there, you read about it, you fill out, you know, two fields, and then you're sent the information. And once you get the information, it guides you through the rest of the steps. Step two, step three, step four.
Excellent. Very simple.
Step five, laugh about it.
Excellent. So are you, whenever you're doing text online, is it basically the same size as text that you would do in a direct mail campaign, or is it a different size?
Yeah, it should be about the, you know, 12-point font is perfectly fine.
Okay.
If it's larger than that, then it sounds like you're shouting. If it's smaller than that, then it's hard to read, and you've just made it distracting from your message.
Okay. Sounds cool. I'm just going to shoot out kind of a bunch of ideas at you. This is kind of a off the top of my head type thing. As far as developing a trust with the prospect, when it comes to the sales process, regardless whether you're writing a letter or you're writing a letter for direct mail or a letter for the website, how do you develop a trust with a prospect from the very beginning when they just start reading your letter all the way through to basically the follow-up after you've made the sale? What's kind of the key? I mean, you and Mark really put together some fantastic letters that drew the people into the website and developed a trust that really wasn't common, you know, with a lot of other websites. So you guys have a secret somewhere. That's what I'm digging for.
Secret for developing trust?
Yeah.
There is no secret for developing trust. It's just be trustworthy.
Okay.
You know, if you have something to hide, then you need to re-examine your whole marketing.
Right, okay.
That's all there is to it. I will be upfront about everything. You know, I will warn people about how they may react to something. And
so basically,
I'm looking for an example, but I'm not coming up with any.
Basically, kind of speak from the heart.
Well, yeah, of course, speak from the heart. And like Joe Vitale says, when he writes any kind of sales letter, he writes to one person. You know,
yeah.
The sales letter that you'll see at savemyemail.org. I basically, the one that I decided to use, and I'll still probably go back and tweak it, but I just wanted to get something up there. And it's just something I wrote to my mother, and then I went back through and you know, made it apply. But that's who I thought of when I was writing the letter, and it helped it come out a lot more personal. And I did that because, one, because I know that she's someone who's not very technical, and I wanted her to understand that this is not about being technical or installing new software or anything. The second thing is I know how she feels about spam, okay? Uh-huh. And all of my prospects, you know, should be somebody who is annoyed by spam.
Right, yeah.
Probably a lot of people.
99% of people online.
Yeah. And the third reason that I chose my mother is because she is somebody whom I genuinely care about. And I wanted that to come out in that copy.
Right.
And I really hope it does, but I'll take your critique on it.
Sure. Yeah, sure. That sounds cool. So basically what you would do if you were writing copy, we'll use a completely unrelated industry. If you were writing copy for health supplements, pills, some sort of antioxidant supplements, you're writing copy for that, but you know from your research that 5% of the people in the world have difficulty swallowing a pill, regardless how big it is. So you could actually come out in your copy following your principle, using the heartfelt approach,
mm-hmm.
and basically in the copy say, you know, these are the most fantastic supplements that I've ever seen, because they're filled with this and this and this stuff. The only downfall that I could foresee is approximately 5 people out of every 100 are not going to be able to use this because they have problems swallowing pills. Is that
yeah.
the kind of example where you actually give both sides of the coin, you kind of play both sides of the coin? This is the best stuff in the world, but if you can't take pills, it's not going to help you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
okay.
the worst thing that you can do is get somebody to speak ill about you, all right? Any sales training will tell you that you need to qualify your prospect first.
Yeah.
So just like when you're selling in person, if you can qualify them earlier on in the selling process
yeah.
and qualify them out and say, you don't apply to this product,
right.
then do it. Don't bug them. Don't waste their time. Show some respect for the person. And you know what? They won't run around and say that, you know, oh, I wasted a whole bunch of time with this. It's like,
right.
oh, well, you know, it wasn't for me, but it might help you.
Okay, yeah. That's an interesting perspective, where you actually cut people out before you get to the sales part.
Exactly, yeah. You don't need to put anyone through that.
Right. So what about, now this is just another one kind of out of the blue for you. What about
mm-hmm.
using RSS feeds as a supplement to using email, basically in a kind of a supplemental or another way of communicating with your subscribers or your customers?
I think it's great. I really do. I'm waiting for the day where it's reached a level of acceptance and standardization. I don't think it's going to replace email. It probably won't replace email ever.
Right.
But I don't think it's even going to replace email as a selling tool. But it can be effective for certain things, okay? The advertorial that we talked about
yeah.
is a news item. And RSS is something that lends itself to news. So you'll go through and you'll probably get a whole lot more RSS feeds in a day than you get email
uh-huh.
once it's adopted enough, you know.
Right.
You go through and there's 20 different headlines from such and such local news source and 30 on your favorite hobby, car collecting, and then, you know, 2 about, you know, parenting, and then over here in internet marketing, well, there's 30. And you probably know most of those are going to be, you know, some kind of junk offer for something that's hackneyed. Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, not in your alley. Okay.
Right. Yep.
But the ones that are going to cut through is something that has a really fabulous headline that sounds newsworthy.
Right. Yep.
So that also falls into the art of copywriting is how to make something newsworthy. It's really not as hard as you think. You know, what was the example that you gave?
The supplements. You mean?
The supplements. Okay.
Yeah.
So I mean that's pretty newsworthy. There's a new development because the product does something that nothing ever did before. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So new product cures blah in a surprising way, or
yep.
at half the cost,
right,
or
yep.
How about this new cure is more of a benefit,
yep.
Allows twice as many people to use the product, okay?
Yep.
And what you could be explaining then in the copy of this advertorial is that you can reach these people because you've made it cheaper or whatever it is. Do you have a benefit in mind for this product?
Definitely. We could maybe like a weight loss something.
Okay, some it's weight loss.
Yeah.
Well, everything is about a new diet or a new pill and weight loss. I mean, it's
bad example.
It's not a bad example, but it almost seems too obvious. Okay. It works though.
Okay. What about? Okay, you've got a new supplement that increases your energy.
New supplement that increases your energy.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you could you have more energy during the day. You don't get your kind of slumps, ups and downs.
Oh, that's awesome. We're trying to promote this via RSS, so we're looking for a newsworthy headline. You could play off of things that would enthuse a certain hobbyist. So you might say, let's just go down this route. How will football leagues respond to breakthrough energy enhancer?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. And when you do that, you know, people will read something about football that they probably with time wouldn't have allotted for other things. Okay.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
You know, you could do that because you could take this energy principle and apply it to anything. You could write the same article actually about football and about an opera singer and about a business person, and it can even be theoretical. You can take the one example and just change that paragraph that says, you know, the pundits in the business industry are wondering what this will do. After seeing the example that's already happened with long-distance runners and this new energy product. And
right.
Then you talk about how it was developed and blah, blah, blah. Then you take that same format and you customize it to 10 different things, and you can submit that to 100 different publications.
So you seriously leverage your time. You basically write the article once and then tweak one paragraph to fit it into whatever niches you want to put it into.
Yeah, exactly. As long as you do it respectfully and you still inform people, then absolutely. And don't be afraid in the editorial to, you know, to mention that, I don't know, maybe it's only a matter of time before the patent expires and, you know, this will change, but for now the only place to get it is through blah, blah, blah.
Okay. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So you come up with a totally... well, I shouldn't say totally, but basically a template, kind of benefit all out piece of copy, and then just rework it to hit specific markets that would be of interest to people who wouldn't specifically sit and read an energy enhancement product sheet, but they
right.
would be interested to see why their football player, you know, can run twice as fast as, you know, the other team, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, oh, that's
right.
That's a good angle. Here, write that down now. So what about...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, what about blogging? Does that kind of fit in with the blogging aspect as well? Because that's basically, what I've seen anyway, is blogging is pretty much articles or comments, you know, on a specific, very tightly targeted niche. But you could use the same type of thing for blogging then. Or is it totally different?
With blogging, well, blogs and RSS feeds are definitely synchronizing now.
Yep.
So, yeah. What that changes is instead of having probably a traditional publishing organization, like you, instead of going to CNN, now you're going to Joe Schmo who has his own agenda.
Yep.
And it's probably harder to try to sell him on writing about your product because he's probably going to write about it from his own standpoint.
Right. Yep.
But if you can customize it well enough, then sure, he might. There's definitely business there. It's especially a niche thing if, you know, like your person on your list who's starting out with no money and no internet experience, go after the smaller players because the big guys are going after the bigger fish.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
and that's where you can make your first profits and start to build your list. But blogging and RSS is really going to be the same technology, and it already is in a lot of places.
Okay. And what about if you're going to be marketing ebooks? Would you use basically the same formula that we've just discussed now, or is there some other tactics that you would do specifically for ebooks?
The only thing that's different with an ebook is it makes it really easy to do an advertorial because usually you can just swipe out a chapter and submit that.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, you may have an ebook with 23 chapters. You give away what's essentially a free sample of the book, but you may have one chapter that uses this particular example that comes from the boat racing world. And all of a sudden, you know, you happen to be able to take that chapter and not only put it in a business book, but you can also promote it to boat racing, which is good because probably people who are boat racing have a lot of money.
Exactly. Yep. That would be a good market to hit. So what about then, now you've got an ebook, for example, or an online product. What avenues would you use in the offline world to promote your online products or business?
Let's get more specific. Give me an example.
Sure. What about, let's say I have written a course on developing yourself into a more effective business person. Now, the course is online, so that you basically, it'll be an email course or a website that ends up turning into a course.
Mm-hmm.
But I know now the personal development and internet marketing side of the business on the internet is so saturated and clogged with information as well as misinformation. I want to go offline somewhere and promote my online business to a segment of the population who isn't online all the time. So I want to hit the people basically offline and get them to go to my website. But where would I go cost effectively to go offline?
All right, well, I have to stop you first, Terry. I need to ask you whether you really believe that this book that you have is a good value and is something that isn't offered anywhere else or isn't offered at the kind of price range that you have for it.
Okay. I would have, for example, I have a book that will tell you how to achieve your goals within 3 minutes.
Totally within 3 minutes. Right.
Totally unique information.
Okay.
Yeah, it's something that is not readily available anywhere, and I've put it online.
All right. I would ask you why you're not going the advertorial route first, because that kind of information I do think people would be willing to hear about.
Okay. But could I use an advertorial offline?
Absolutely, you can use an advertorial offline.
Okay.
You know, traditional publishers are scrambling, honestly, because it used to be a lot easier because everybody would fax in their publicity and news was getting placed, but there isn't. The old people are sticking to offline publishers, and all the new people are going online, so there isn't a lot of cross traffic.
Okay.
If you have a traditional product, you know what? You probably have an avenue to use some of the online advertorial places, newsletters, e-zines, and content sites. If you have a product that's heavily promoted online or saturated, I shudder at the word saturated because I still think that that's a myth, 90% of everything. But if you perceive that it's saturated, then you know what, you probably do have better avenues offline with traditional publishers. Their addresses are public. You know, you can go to the library and look at the periodicals section and just find the addresses and put something, a stamp or an envelope, or they're all probably online and you can submit them there too. That's a perfectly legitimate way to get your information out. Newspapers.
So basically, you're back to you're leveraging to be able to leverage that advertorial to get out to e-zines, article directories, that kind of thing, but then also send that online advertorial over to your local newspaper and magazines and all that that avenue of offline.
Exactly.
So you're still looking at pretty much a no or low cost avenue of getting your marketing out there, building your website, getting the publicity that you need to start generating, and then of course making the sales.
Yeah. I'm frugal, so I'm looking for low cost or no cost first, no matter what.
That's perfect. The advertorial, I think, by listening to what you're saying, the advertorial really is definitely a way to go. And you just simply, you don't even have to be a really good copywriter, I don't think, to put together a decent advertorial, because you're not actually doing it as if you're doing a website where you have to basically sell your product on that page. You're really... One of your main concerns is to actually convey new information to your prospect, not just simply sell, but to build your credibility.
Yeah. Good copy should educate. The goal of your advertorial, well, not necessarily, the goal of your advertorial should be to get customers interested to go to your site,
yep.
or to take the next step towards purchasing the product. And you should have those steps as to the bare minimum, but a good advertorial should inform, because there's always that quid pro quo, you know.
Yeah.
It's the same offline or online. It's just some things are more efficient online, and some things are still more efficient offline.
What would be more efficient offline?
Conversations are more efficient offline.
Right,
I can do a lot more with you over the telephone than I can over email. You know, this conversation would have taken months over email.
If not years.
Right.
What about as far as expenses-wise, thinking marketing-wise? Direct mail, for example, or direct marketing, expenses versus results. Would it be more...
I think a lot of direct mail campaigns are going to be dying. That's just my idea as a futurist and as somebody who's really interested in efficiency. I believe that most of it is stuck around because there's already an infrastructure for it. There are people who know how to do it and can be comfortable with the results. But as consumers continue to go online, we're, I think, 30% through the expected broadband conversion in the first world countries. People will be more comfortable with buying products online, and an email is a much more efficient way to reach people than a letter in an envelope.